Now it's time for the Hawaiian Eye Show, sponsored by Hawaiian Eye Center, where life has never looked better. This is your weekly informative hour all about eyes. Learn about cataracts. Ask a question about glaucoma. Find out how diabetes affects your eyes. Stay tuned for an entertaining and educational program about eyes and eye care. Call in to have your questions answered by the doctor. Now, your host, Harvard-trained eye surgeon, Dr. Christopher Tortora.
Good morning, everyone. It's time once again for our regular weekly program about eyes and eye care. It's called the Hawaiian Eye Show, and it's sponsored by Hawaiian Eye Center, where life has never looked better. We're going to be here for the next hour talking about glasses and bifocals, about laser beams and eye surgery. We can talk about your cataracts or your contacts, itchy eyes, droopy lids, or whatever it is that interests you. If you'd like to join in today, give us a call. Our number here, 521-8383. We'd love to hear about your experiences and answer your questions. If you can't call in today, or maybe you're feeling a bit shy, you can always email your questions to us. Our email address is eyes@hawaiianeye.com, and we can answer those questions over the air. Look us up on the web while you're online at www.hawaiianeye.com. You can also follow me on Twitter by going to twitter.com/Dr. Tortora, D-R-T-O-R-T-O-R-A, no spaces. We've also got a Facebook presence. Go to facebook.com/Hawaiian Eye Center to see the latest, what's going on in the Hawaiian Eye Center world, what's new in eyes and eye care, and even some of the things we're talking about on the radio may show up there on our Facebook page as well as on our Twitter page. So check us out online as well. During the next hour, we'll discuss eye news from around the country and around the world. Sometimes we'll do an eye quiz to test your IQ, and we'll have a lot of fun today. Now remember, all opinions expressed on this program are those of myself and the other medical doctors of the Hawaiian Eye Center. I'm an ophthalmologist, or IMD, which means I'm a medical doctor specializing in the eyes. Now we're going to try to be very consumer-oriented today, make an effort to give you the best possible practical advice. But remember, since I can't see through the telephone, I may have to recommend an examination before I can tell you exactly what's going on in your eyes. Hawaiian Eye Center does sponsor our program today as a public service. So sit back, relax, and enjoy an hour all about eyes. Well, those of you who listened closely last week saw or heard that it was a previously pre-recorded program, or it was a program that had run previously. And the reason is because I was on Maui attending a meeting, an annual meeting of eye specialists, of eye doctors, and every year, on one of the neighbor islands, there's a big, long, a week-long meeting of eye specialists, probably about 500 or 600 people attending the meeting. And they are talking about all of the latest, newest, most interesting, and some basic stuff as well related to the field of ophthalmology and eye care. And so I wanted to spend a little time talking about some of my take-homes, some of my things I've learned over the past week that I've attended this Royal Hawaiian Eye meeting, and share also with you some of the stuff that's new, different, interesting, exciting, and novel in eye care. So the first and biggest thing that I think a lot of people spent time talking about at the meeting is the concept of using a laser during cataract surgery. Now, a lot of you listening to the program here may think that we already do cataract surgery with a laser. In fact, cataract surgery is not currently done with laser. It's done with making a small opening or incision in the eye and using an ultrasound energy to break up and remove the cataract. Now, lasers are interesting tools, but what they can do is somewhat limited. The laser light contains energy, and because it's light, it can be focused at a specific point in space. And so the thing that lasers are able to do that we can't always do with other types of instrumentation is to provide energy in a very focused and direct point in tissue. And in the eye, since much of the ocular tissue is clear, it's an optical system, we can deliver light to many different parts of the eye and very pointedly create energy at those points in order to achieve some kind of a goal, whatever it is that we're trying to achieve or trying to do in the in providing the laser energy there. And so in treating certain types of problems in the eye, whether it's glaucoma or diabetic eye disease or certain forms of scarring that occur after cataract surgery. The laser is very good because it can deliver these pinpoint areas of energy at a very specific point, very specific focus, without doing damage to tissue other than the tissue that we're trying to treat with the laser. So when it comes to removing a cataract is a physical obstruction to light in the eye. And a cataract is a thick lens in the eye. There's no way to vaporize or dissolve the cataract, as far as anyone's been able to figure out, by using a laser. But what the laser can do is it can do precise cuts, and it can do things to kind of start to break up or modify the lens in the eye before the cataract is removed through the traditional methods. So what is happening, or what's kind of new in the field of ophthalmology currently in the field of cataract removal, is what they may be termed laser-assisted cataract surgery. So using the laser to help in some of the processes associated with cataract surgery. So I actually watched a number of videos of how this laser works. I talked to people who have used it. And basically, in my opinion, if someone is an experienced cataract surgeon, you know, I've done over 10,000 cataract surgeries, so I'd say that counts as, you know, a good amount of experience. The benefits that the laser provides are quite small, quite minimal. The cost of the laser is huge. I mean, this is a laser that costs more than $500,000. And if you're looking at putting into hospitals and surgery centers and other things, that's going to significantly increase the cost of medical care. So it's a gadget, basically, so far. And so as far as I can tell, so far, it's basically just a, you know, something that has a good appeal. I want my cataract done with a laser. I don't want it done with the regular techniques. I want the most advanced technique. I want the laser. But at this point, it's still a gimmick. Now, over time, the technologies and the way of using it may improve. And so that may change over the next 4, 5, 6, 8, 10 years. But currently, and for the foreseeable future, the next couple of years, it's not really adding any benefit to the surgical procedure with surgeons who are skilled, and it is adding a significant cost to the procedure, which is probably going to be borne by the patient, because the Medicare system is unlikely to pay more for something that hasn't been proven to have any additional help. So there's probably a lot of patients out there, a lot of people out there who say, ooh, I want the latest technology. I'll pay an extra $1,000 or $2,000 or $5,000 or whatever it is for my cataract surgery in order to have this laser treatment. And unfortunately, they're not going to probably see any real significant benefit for that additional expense. So I think it's in its early stages. I think there is a group here in Hawaii that is going to be ordering one of these lasers. So if you want to spend an extra few $1,000s on your cataract procedure for no appreciable benefit, you'll probably have the opportunity to do that right here in Hawaii. All right, I'm going to go to the phones here now. We have Audie standing by in Aiea. Hi, welcome to the program. You have to turn down your radio.
Hi, good morning, doctor.
Hi.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, fine.
I just got new glasses. I'm a pilot. I used to have about 18/20 vision, went to 20/20. Now it's 20/25 with astigmatism, and I don't know if the correction is doing anything. It doesn't seem to enhance my vision. I can notice it a little bit on television, and in the movie theaters it looks more clear. Is it possibly because I'm getting older and perhaps getting a cataract? It might be.
Well, how old are you?
I'm 71.
Yeah, I mean, certainly by the time you're in your 70s, cataracts are usually at least somewhat starting to affect your vision. And so if you haven't had a cataract addressed, having that evaluated is certainly worthwhile. And certainly for pilots who need, you know, good vision, 20/20 vision, to be able to pass the FAA regulations, cataract surgery at a relatively early stage in order to improve your vision is a reasonable alternative.
Why don't the glasses seem to enhance or increase or make more clear? I have an astigmatic problem, too. I forgot that.
Well, astigmatism is correctable with glasses, but if your astigmatism is an issue and you're having a cataract removed, the astigmatism can often be corrected at the same time if it is if it's in a part of the eye that won't be affected by the cataract surgery itself. Astigmatism can occur in several parts of the eye. One part is the lens, and the lens is removed with cataract surgery. But if the astigmatism is in the cornea, on the surface of the eye, that can often be corrected at the time of cataract surgery. So ask your doctor for sure about that if you are considering cataract as an option.
So back to my original question, and I don't find much reality in wearing my glasses when I watch my 21-inch television from about 12 feet away and read the captions, that it sometimes just helps a little bit to enhance the clarity. Why am I not getting more clarity from my glasses and new prescription?
Well, if you have a cataract, that would be one explanation, but without looking at your eyes, I can't tell you, I can't really answer that question for you. So go ahead and get it, talk to your eye specialist or get another opinion if you're not happy with the quality of the vision. It may very well be that there's a cataract. There may be other changes inside the eyes that are affecting the vision, but without a thorough examination of your eyes, it's hard to really speak to any of those issues.
Okay, thanks. I'll get a hold of you. Bye-bye. Have a good day.
All right. Follow. Aloha. All right. Well, that's, as you get older, cataracts can be an issue. Other things can affect the eyes. So hopefully it's something that can be addressed. We're going to take a short break and we'll be right back.
If you need the personal attention of Dr. Tortora or one of the other doctors of the Hawaiian Eye Center, where life has never looked better, visit their offices in Central Oahu and in Hilo on the Big Island. Call for your appointment. The number on Oahu is 733-2020. That spells C-2020. From the neighbor islands, call toll-free 1-888-621-2020.
When you have a cataract, your vision gets gradually worse over time. You don't see as well.
Having the corrective surgery and now having the vision of a much younger man, I can see again.
Our state-of-the-art surgery center offers safety and convenience without a hospital stay. Visit our website and learn what's involved in a cataract procedure. You'll be surprised how easy it can be.
Take a virtual tour of a cataract procedure at their website, HawaiianEye.com. To make an appointment, call Hawaiian Eye Center at C-2020. That's 733-2020. Or from the neighbor islands, call 888-621-2020.
Life has never looked better with Hawaiian Eye Center.
The Hawaiian Eye Show phone lines are now open. Give us a call at 521-8383 with your questions for the doctor. If you're calling from the neighbor islands, call us toll-free at 888-565-8383. Now, back to your host, Harvard-trained eye surgeon, Dr. Christopher Tortora.
We were young and life was sharp and clear. Can you see me now? Hawaiian eyes.
Ah, yes, Hawaiian Eyes. And you're listening to the Hawaiian Eye Show, where we're talking about eyes. This is Dr. Christopher Tortora. We've been talking about some of the things that I took home from the Royal Hawaiian Eye meeting that was going on in Maui last week. As a matter of fact, Dr. Corboy, who did this radio program years and years ago, probably last time he was on our air was 5 or 6 years ago, but he used to do the program regularly as recently as 10 or 12 years ago. And he actually founded this Royal Hawaiian Eye meeting and has grown into a large popular meeting. People love to come out to Hawaii to get their education because they get to join education with having their family come out and be able to enjoy the climate and the environment on the neighbor islands. Anyway, there was a lot of education going on, though, and we talked just in the last segment about lasers and cataract surgery and the fact that there is new technology that's being used in cataract surgery that's a laser. So now for the first time, when people say, don't they use lasers to take out cataracts? We can say, yes, in fact, they do. But I would also add to that that the laser procedure really offers, for the vast majority of people, offers no significant advantage over the standard cataract removal techniques using ultrasound energy, which is how we've always removed cataracts in the past 20 years or so. So other things that we heard about at this meeting, I had a chance to try a new surgical procedure, relatively new surgical procedure. It's only been around for the past 4 or 5 years for the treatment of glaucoma in people who want to reduce their dependence on the medications that they're on for glaucoma. It's a surgical procedure, so it's not for everyone, but it is a procedure that has met with a fairly high degree of success. It's called canaloplasty, and we're looking at whether we can bring that to Hawaii. There's a few doctors who have tried it here and there here in Hawaii, but no one who's doing it regularly and consistently. So that's something that we're going to look at bringing to Hawaii, is this procedure that's been showing a great deal of promise across the country. Another thing that I heard a lot about at the Royal Hawaiian Eye meeting was information about the difference between generic medications and name brand medications. And this is something that's been getting a lot of attention among, you know, doctors, journals, and publications nationwide for a while. But now that many insurance companies are saying that they'll only provide coverage for generic medications unless there's special paperwork done to exempt them, and now that there are many more generic medications available, particularly in the field of eye care, than there used to be, the question has come up, are the generic medications really equivalent to the name brand medications they replace? And so this is an excellent question. And there is actually an example in the history of ophthalmology, of eye care, where a generic medication came out that was supposed to be equivalent to a medication that it replaced, and it caused all kinds of problems and complications among patients that had to be, you know, pulled off the market very quickly once it was discovered that it was creating all of these problems, and did cause a few very serious cases that resulted in vision loss and even blindness in some cases. And so the question is, are these generic medications safe? And what kind of process do they go through to prove that they're safe and effective? And so I learned something, a couple of interesting things that I actually wasn't aware of. It actually turns out that for systemic medications, for pills that you take, so forth, the manufacturer does have to demonstrate that there's equivalency between the medication that's available as a generic and the medication that is used for previously the name brand medication. With eye drops, though, the requirements are significantly less. It just has to show that there's the appropriate amount of the active ingredient in order to be acceptable as a generic medication. And there's no requirement for what's called a clinical trial. Clinical trials are when any drug is tried on people in a controlled environment where it can be monitored for complications, for effectiveness, and other factors that are important in figuring out the safety and effectiveness of a new medication. And so because the FDA is so backed up with new medication applications and new product applications, they basically make it very easy to pass the hurdles that are required for coming up with a generic medication that's similar to a name brand medication. And so they just say, well, it just has to be the same concentration and strength and et cetera. But they don't make any requirements about what the solution that the drop is in has to be like, what the pH of the drop has to be, and all of these things. And as we've learned over time in eye care, what we've learned is that the solution that a medication is in can be as important in determining whether that medication is effective as the active ingredient itself. And the reason is because when a drop is placed in the eye, for example, that drop has to be absorbed by the eye or by the tissues around the eye or in the eye that it's going to treat. And once it's absorbed by those tissues, it may enter into the eye or it may just remain on the surface of the eye. And so certain types of medications need to be absorbed into the eye. And so the vehicle, what we call the vehicle, which is the solution that the medication is in, can be very important in the absorption. How long it stays in contact with the surface of the eye has in part to do with the viscosity or the thickness of the drop. Whether the drop stings when it goes in your eye or not is related in part to what's called the buffering, which is related to the pH. Is the drop a little acidic? Is it a little alkaline? Is it just right in the middle? what's most comfortable for the eyes. And so all of these factors can be important variables in the production of generic medications. And one of the problems with generic medications, particularly in ophthalmology, is that when there's a popular medication that goes off-brand and becomes generic, there may be 4 or 5 or 10 manufacturers that all make that medication. And when you get generic, you may get any of them. So there's no control over which one you get. So you may have companies A, B, C, and D all making generic medications. And companies A, B, and C may make very good ones, but company D may not make such a good one. There's nothing that says that you will get either A, B, or C. You'll get whichever one that pharmacy has, whichever one they got at the lowest price, whichever one is available in your market. So you may very well get the medicine made by company D, which didn't do as good a job at formulating it, so the medication is not as effective, or it's not as safe, or it's not as comfortable to put in the eye. So this is a big issue now that is going on in eye care, with increasing numbers of medications going to generic, and particularly a problem that was reported at this meeting had to do with patients who are undergoing surgery for their eyes. When they undergo surgery, you know, the eye is in a vulnerable state for a period of time. The eye is at a higher risk for infection. The surface of the eye can be disrupted more easily. If the eye is a little dry to start with, the dryness can be made temporarily worse after surgery. And so all of these issues are addressed in part by the drops that we give people to use after eye surgery. And if those drops are not up to the standard of the drops that the doctor expects, or what sometimes happens is the pharmacy will substitute a generic medication when the doctor has specified a name brand medication, then the patient may not benefit. Now, generic medications work well for the vast majority of things, and I have no problem with the reduced cost that generic medications can provide. And I think that for the majority of patients, the generic medications are probably fine. But there is a subset of patients, a group of patients, that won't do as well with these medications because of the factors we talked about, that they're not as consistent, they're not as comfortable, they're not as, there may be something about it that's not as effective. And so as a result, what may happen is that these people may not do as well after their surgery. They may not recover as quickly. They may develop complications associated with the surgery. They may have drops that are not so comfortable and maybe stop using them, thus losing the effect or the benefit of using these medications. And so all of these things do factor into it. And so at minimum, what I would like to see is that pharmacies be required to provide the medication that specifically is requested by the doctor, unless the patient desires otherwise, in which case then the doctor is consulted to make sure that that's okay. And so the what's happening, not so much in Hawaii, our laws here are reasonably good, but in some states the pharmacies are permitted to go ahead and substitute a medication that's not even exactly the same medication but is available in a generic form. And so it may not be the same strength, the same concentration, the same formulation, but because the specific ingredient is available in a generic medication, then the pharmacy is permitted to make that substitution. The other thing that I learned that was very interesting about generic medications is that the price of generic medications can vary hugely among different pharmacies. And you'd think, oh, it's generic, it should be cheap, right? And that in many cases is true. These generic medications can save patients a lot of money, which is a good thing. But the cost of a generic medication can be all over the map. I talked to surgeons who had actually called various pharmacies to find out what the price of medications were, and they found one particular medication that varied in cost, with people who didn't have insurance, it varied in cost from $20 to $120 in different pharmacies. And so I thought that was, very interesting as well, is that sometimes people think they're saving a lot of money by using these generic medications, and then it turns out that they're being overcharged for them, or they're being charged a price that's equivalent to what the name brand medication would have been. So, so then what's the point? Why not use the medication that's been proven over time and directly approved by the Food and Drug Administration Why use one that may be inferior when the cost is going to be the same? So those are all a lot of interesting factors. I'm not quite sure what I'm going to do about them in my particular practice, but they are things definitely to think about. All right, we do have open phone lines. If you want to give us a call, 521-8383 is the number to call. And we're going to take a short break for the news, and then we'll be right back and take your calls.
If you need the personal attention of Dr. Tortora or one of the other doctors of the Hawaiian Eye Center, where life has never looked better, visit their offices in Central Oahu and in Hilo on the Big Island. Call for your appointment. The number on Oahu is 733-2020. That spells C-2020. From the neighbor islands, call toll-free 1-888-621-2020.
Hawaiian Eye Center offers complete eye care for the entire family. Now, cataract patients can reduce or eliminate their dependence on eyeglasses with premium cataract care in as little as 15 minutes. Their experienced surgeons have extensive cataract and general eye care experience. And they proudly welcome their newest eye surgeon, Dr. Stephen Ree. Dr. Ree brings a wealth of experience to the Hawaiian Eye Center team. To schedule an appointment with a member of the eye care team, call Hawaiian Eye Center today at 733-2020 or visit the website at hawaiianeye.com.
Hawaiian Eye Center offers you complete eye care for the entire family. Now, cataract patients can reduce or eliminate their dependence on eyeglasses with premium cataract care in as little as 15 minutes. Advanced technology lenses are designed to provide good vision for distance, near and in between, with less dependence on eyeglasses. When cataracts blur vision, a short, painless procedure helps. If you have a cataract and want back youthful vision, call Hawaiian Eye Center at 733-2020 or visit hawaiianeye.com.
The phone lines are now open at 521-8383. On the Neighbor Islands, it's a free call, 1-888-565-8383. And now, here's Dr. Christopher Tortora.
Okay, welcome back, everyone. And sorry about that. We thought we'd have a little music coming in here, but timing was off. Okay, so we're talking about eyes. We're talking about some of the new things going on in the field of ophthalmology, some of the things I picked up at the Royal Hawaiian Eye meeting this past week where I attended there. And we're just talking about generic medications versus the name brand alternatives. And the conclusion was that as far as pills, there's probably pretty good equivalency between the name brand medications and the other medications, because they need to test blood levels of the medication to make sure that it's actually delivering the blood levels of the medication in the generic form that it is in the name brand form. But in eye drops, there's no way to really measure the effectiveness. You can't go, you know, measuring the concentration of the medication inside the eye. There's no way to do that effectively without a much more invasive procedure. You know, there's no blood test for the inside of the eye, basically. So it'll be interesting to see what happens as we learn more about the differences between the generic types of eye drops and the name brand ones and whether they have any significant differences in effect. So this is the second half of the program here. Now this is the time when we traditionally take your calls. So if you do have something that you'd like to talk about or you'd like to hear about, you'd like me to talk about, go ahead and give us a call. 521-8383 is the number to call. And if you're calling for the Neighbor Islands, there is a toll-free number. It's 888-565-8383. I'll say that again, 888-565-8383. And we're happy to try to answer your questions. A couple of things have come up in the past couple of weeks in terms of studies and other things. There's a study that we mentioned on this program a few weeks ago related to aspirin and the link to early and late forms of age-related macular degeneration, a condition affecting the inside of the eye where the central vision is damaged by age-related changes there. And so just in a summary here of that particular study, talking about researchers surveyed a random cross-section of about 5,000 subjects aged 65 years or older throughout Europe about aspirin use, medical history, socioeconomic background, smoking, and alcohol consumption. Daily aspirin users were twice as likely to have wet macular degeneration, a more severe form of the disease. The odds ratios rose with increasing frequency of consumption across all grades of macular degeneration, with the exception of grade 3 disease. So after adjusting for all known confounders, including cardiovascular disease, the association did remain. The authors recommend more study on the associations between aspirin and wet macular degeneration. And so because of that, that study has raised some questions and some fears among people about, gee, you know, I take medicine, I take aspirin because my doctor recommends it for my heart or for my other issues to prevent stroke or other things. And so should I continue using aspirin or should I reconsider the use of aspirin? And so this has been a question that has come up among patients because of the study, and people have been concerned about the possibility of macular degeneration. So the bottom line, in my opinion, is that if you're taking the aspirin on your doctor's recommendation for a good reason, because he has reasons to suspect that the aspirin's going to benefit you over time, the increased risk of macular degeneration is not enough to worry about to make you stop the aspirin. If you're just taking it because you like the idea of taking an aspirin a day or a couple of aspirin a day, or you're taking it a lot of aspirin because of arthritis or something, then that's something that you may want to reconsider and see whether there are alternatives as a result of this study. So there was an editorial by a doctor in one of our medical journals, one of our eye journals. And so I just wanted to read a few comments of what this particular doctor said in his article. He says, over the last several months, a notable proportion of my macular degeneration patients have been inquiring about aspirin use and macular degeneration. This is not surprising because I heard a newscast in the lay press that a recent study found an association between daily aspirin use and late macular degeneration. A lot of my patients heard that as well, so that's why they're asking questions. Okay, so it's an editorial or an article I'm reading by an ophthalmologist in one of our journals. It says the article that caused the stir was published in January's edition of the journal Ophthalmology. It's a population-based cross-sectional study conducted in seven medical centers across Europe. 5,000 patients were considered, in which 160 or so were determined to have macular degeneration. 830 of the patients reported daily aspirin use. The authors calculated the odds ratios and attempted to adjust for confounders, including age, sex, cardiovascular disease, and angina, or heart disease with reduced blood flow to the heart. A key table in the manuscript is Table 2, where actual numbers of patients reported in each category. There are only 36 patients with late wet macular degeneration who are taking daily aspirin, compared to 51 patients who never took aspirin who had the same disease. So it turns out that statistically that's significant, though, in increasing the risk of the macular degeneration patients. So this doctor goes on to make the points. For late wet macular degeneration, the authors report that a statistically significant odds ratio, even after adjusting for possible confounders, that means that patients with late wet macular degeneration were 2 times more likely to be on daily aspirin compared to patients who never take aspirin. Okay, so this, according to the doctor, he wants to highlight the fact that this is not the same as saying that patients on daily aspirin were 2 times more likely to develop wet macular degeneration. Okay, so you hear the distinction there. He's saying that, maybe this study isn't as bad as it sounds because it said people who had wet macular degeneration were 2 times more likely to be on aspirin daily compared to patients who never took aspirin, but it's not the same as saying that patients on aspirin were 2 times more likely to develop wet macular degeneration, right? So if you had the disease, you're more likely to have been using aspirin, but if you're using aspirin, doesn't necessarily mean you're more likely to have the disease, okay? So for late dry macular degeneration, there was no statistically significant association. So it was only the wet one that was a problem. So it says, this is an intriguing result, but keep in mind that it's a cross-sectional study. As such, it is designed to generate hypotheses. Its outcome measures are associations that do not prove causality. The next step in investigating this association would be to have a prospective study, meaning you start trying, you know, some people on one treatment, some people on another, and see what happens. It says, another potential hazard in the study design is unaccounted confounding variables. Additionally, the actual patient numbers in Table 2 are fairly low, only 36 patients on daily aspirin with late wet macular degeneration. As such, the results of the study have not impacted this particular doctor's practice. He says his patients who are on aspirin as recommended by their primary medical doctor stay on it. If patients have started aspirin on their own, they refer whether continued aspirin is likely to help to their standard doctor based on the patient's medical history and other problems associated with their medical condition. So there you go. The study that suggested that there is a link between the use of aspirin, even daily aspirin, to help reduce the effects of blood clots in the heart and in the brain as in forms of strokes or heart attacks may be associated with an increased risk of certain advanced forms of macular degeneration, which can result in significantly reduced vision. So is that study impacting the way we are treating patients as eye specialists? And for me and for Dr. Douglas Covert, who wrote this editorial that I just was reading, feel that for the most part, people shouldn't change what they're doing if they're doing it for good reasons. Now, there are a lot of people who do things, take medications, take supplements, take herbs, take other things because they think that it may benefit them. And some people carry this to an extreme and they have, you know, 15, 20 supplements and pills that they get from the health food store or drugstore, which they take every day because they're all supposed to have beneficial effects in one way or another. But what we don't know is we don't know what all the beneficial effects are, but we also don't know what all the negative effects are. And we don't know that some of these types of things may not interact with each other or may not interact with other medications that people may be taking or may not have medical consequences in other ways. And it's been felt for a while that aspirin is a pretty safe drug because it's been around for a long time. People have been taking it for a while. And because it's a little bit of a blood thinner, it helps to reduce the likelihood of strokes and heart attacks in people who are at risk for those things because of other risk factors. But we don't count on things like, well, does it impact other parts of the body and other systems by having this aspirin constantly circulating in your body? And so the study suggests that maybe it can affect things like the eyes, macular degeneration. And so unless it's being done or given for a good reason, it's probably best not to be on additional medications or treatments that you don't know what benefit they're likely to have. Now, you know, in the case of nutraceuticals, nutritional supplements, and so forth, it's hard to really know what the benefits of these are, and we probably will never know in a clear, scientifically oriented way. In order to scientifically prove something is beneficial, usually what we resort to in medicine, in Western medicine, is a trial or a study where a certain group of people are given the medication and another group of people are given something that they think is the medication or could be the medication, but they're not sure. And then we see what effect the people with the medication is versus people who are using something that's not the medication. And so then we determine whether there's an effect or whether there's a certain endpoint that we're trying to measure. And that's the way we really prove benefit of most types of drugs and medications in medicine. But that's not always practical. For something like vitamin C, for example, you want to see, is vitamin C helpful for the eyes, let's say, in preventing cataracts? So you'd have to take a whole bunch of people, thousands of people, put them on, some of them on vitamin C, some of them on a placebo, something that they think might be vitamin C but is not really, and then follow them over an extended period of time and see which of them have cataracts, maybe 5 years, maybe 10 years, to really get a good sense, and see if the people taking vitamin C get fewer cataracts than the people who don't take vitamin C. And then if they do, then you can say, well, if you take vitamin C, you may not get cataracts as quickly. But who's going to do that study? There's no one who has the financial resources to do a study like that who is going to benefit from it, because manufacturers of vitamin C make very little money because vitamin C sells at a relatively cheap price. And so you can't make a fortune selling vitamin C. So no one's going to say, well, I want to prove that vitamin C is useful because I want to make a fortune selling vitamin C. Whereas if you have an expensive designer drug, it's worth it for the drug company to invest a lot of money in figuring out whether that drug is helpful. Because if it is, they can make a lot of money in selling that drug to people who might benefit from it. All right, let's take a short break. When we get back, we'll take your calls.
If you need the personal attention of Dr. Tortora or one of the other doctors of the Hawaiian Eye Center, where life has never looked better, visit their offices in Central Oahu and in Hilo on the Big Island. Call for your appointment. The number on Oahu is 733-2020. That spells C-2020. From the neighbor islands, call toll-free 1-888-621-2020.
With the latest technology, cataract care is often a fast, painless procedure with a rapid return to normal vision and normal activities.
It doesn't hurt. It just takes, 15, 20 minutes the most, and you're out. That's it.
We strive to make your procedure safe and painless. Visit our website and learn what's involved in a cataract procedure. You'll be surprised how easy it can be.
Take a virtual tour of a cataract procedure at their website, HawaiianEye.com. To make an appointment, call Hawaiian Eye Center at C2020. That's 733-2020. Or from the neighbor islands, call 888-621-2020.
The phone lines are open at 521-8383. And from the neighbor islands, 1-888-565-8383. Now, back to Dr. Christopher Tortora, our host of the Hawaiian Eye Show.
Doctor, my eye.
Okay, welcome back, everyone, and here we are in the last segment of the Hawaiian Eye Show. So this is your chance. If you want to give us a call, you can reach us here at the radio station live. 521-8383 is the number to call. You can let us know what you'd like to hear about, or you can ask a question about your eyes, something been bothering you, something that you want to find out a little bit more about. We're happy to take your calls. You can also find us other places besides here on the radio. You can find us online. There is a significant presence from Hawaiian Eye Center online. You can find it all from our website, HawaiianEye.com. Find us on Twitter, Facebook, of course, on our website. Lots of interesting information on the website about different techniques, different modalities, different things that we do. We have a virtual tour of a cataract procedure online. If you want to find out what kinds of steps you have to go through to have a cataract removed, you can find that right on the HawaiianEye.com website. But also follow us on Twitter during the radio programs. We'll often tweet about some of the articles that we're talking about, so you can find references to them there. Facebook as well. You can also listen to podcasts of the radio program by going to HawaiianEye.com and clicking the radio button. Let's go to the phones. We've got Diana standing by in Honolulu. Hi, Diana. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you. I had the cataract surgery taken off of both eyes, and on my right eye, I notice now that the bottom eyelid is inverted. It's growing in instead of out, and the eyelashes keep rubbing against my eyeballs.
Okay, well, that condition is known as entropion, an inturning eyelid. It probably is not related to the cataract surgery, but I suppose it could be depending on the time association and so forth. But usually it's not a side effect of cataract surgery. But it is often something that occurs as we get older. The skin and the muscles become a little bit more relaxed, and so the lid is allowed to turn in rather than sitting in its normal position. It's something that's fairly easy to fix surgically. Someone who does eyelid surgery, an ophthalmologist, eye specialist, or eyelid specialist can certainly help you with that. It's an outpatient procedure that can be done fairly quickly and easily, and is quite effective in correcting the problem and reducing that irritation that you're having.
Oh, okay. So it's just sort of minor. It's not something that's going to keep growing in and in.
No, I mean, it will irritate you until you get it fixed, so it's worth getting it corrected. But the correction is relatively straightforward, and it's not not difficult. So something that you should probably see your eye specialist about, and if he or she doesn't do this type of procedure, then they can refer you to someone who does.
Oh, okay. That's a good idea. Thank you very much.
All right. Good luck with that. Eyelids are important in the structure and function of the eyeballs. In order to have a healthy eye, you need to have healthy eyelids, because those eyelids protect your eye. The windshield wiper motion of the upper eyelid over the surface of the eye cleans the eye. It washes out debris. Also, if you get something in your eye, you get it's like turning on the sprayer on your windshield wiper. You get extra tearing to help wash out whatever it is in your eye, and you start blinking a little bit more frequently. Those are involuntary reflexes with the blinking and the tearing. And those are designed to help wash out anything that may get into your eye and cause some irritation. If it's an eyelash or an eyelid turning in, and that's what's getting in your eye and causing that irritation, that's not going to get better until that problem is corrected. Some people just have eyelashes that grow inward, a few eyelashes here and there. We call that problem trichiasis, and trichiasis is fairly common as you get older, and it can be related to scarring of the lid. It can be related just to an eyelash that decides to grow the wrong way. And when you do have trichiasis, the lash can be plucked with symptomatic relief, but often the lash does grow back. And so if that lash grows back and continues to cause irritation, it needs to be treated in a more definitive manner, usually with cauterization or a heat treatment, electrolysis, in order to destroy the root of the lash so it doesn't continue to grow back. So trichiasis or an ingrown eyelash can be treated most simply with removing the lash. And if you can't find the lash and remove it, because sometimes they're kind of thin and a little bit hard to get at and find, but if you aren't able to find it, then the eye doctor under his little microscope can look for it and generally pluck out that lash for you and then see if it grows back. If it's a series of lashes that are rubbing against the surface of the eye, probably electrolysis or more definitive treatment should be done to reduce irritation. If the whole eyelid is turning in and all the lashes are rubbing against the eyes, then the treatment is a little bit different. The treatment is aimed then at the position of the eyelid. Like our last caller had this entropion problem, eyelid turning in and the lashes rubbing against the surface of the eye. As you might imagine, this can be quite uncomfortable, can be irritating and cause scratchiness and soreness and irritation of the eye, tearing and so forth. Gooping, sometimes people get goopiness or mucus because mucus is secreted by the eye to try to soothe the surface of the eye to relieve that irritation that's occurring as the lashes rub against the surface of the eye repeatedly. So in order to address those symptoms, really the only thing to do is to have that surgically corrected. In the early stages, if it's only a little bit of irritation, you can use a bunch of artificial tear drops or moisture drops just to sort of soothe the surface of the eye so the rubbing of the lashes isn't as troublesome. But over time, that's going to continue to give you problems because those lashes are irritating to the surface of the eye, and you don't want them continuing to rub over the surface of the eye that way. Okay, so a couple other things that can happen with the eyelids over time as we get older. The lids can become more droopy. That's called ptosis. Ptosis is a word that sounds like it starts with a T, but it actually starts with the letter P. It's a PT, ptosis, but it's actually pronounced ptosis. P-T-O-S-I-S, ptosis. And ptosis is a drooping of the eyelid, and that can occur for a number of reasons as well. It can occur sometimes because of the because of some nerve problems. And if that's the case, that needs to be checked out. We need to find out if the nerve problems that are affecting the eye and the eyelid might be affecting other parts of your body. But it can also be caused by age, weakness of the muscles that lift the lid. And if that eye muscle that lifts the lid is a little bit weak, then that results in drooping of the eyelid or ptosis. And that drooping of the lid can be repaired or fixed surgically by strengthening or tightening the muscle that lifts the lid. So that's something that also can be addressed. So if the lid is droopy, that certainly can be repaired. If it's drooping enough to block your vision, it should probably be repaired. And both lids, as we get older, tend to droop. Also, extra skin hangs down a little bit. This is similar to ptosis, but it's actually the extra skin hanging down, blocking your vision, has a different name, one of these long medical names. It's called dermatocalasis. And this dermatocalasis is very common in Asians and people who live here in Hawaii. We see a lot of it, and it tends to, over time, if it droops enough, it tends to block the vision as well. And that can be repaired as well with a procedure known as blepharoplasty, surgical procedure. Other things that affect the eyelids that you should be aware of is the lower lid, instead of turning inward, what we were talking about before, entropion, it can turn outward. That's called ectropion. Ectropion, or outward turning of the eyelid, can make the lower eyelid look very red and very angry looking because the part of the skin or the part of the lid that's normally moist and it's a mucous membrane becomes very dry, and that dryness causes a lot of swelling and irritation of the skin of the eyelid, and so that outturning eyelid can make the eye, the whole eye, look kind of red and angry, even though it's really just the lower lid that is affected. And if you look at someone who has a significant ectropion, and you look at their eye and you say, oh my gosh, that eye is so red, what's going on there? And that's actually the lower lid where it turns out is very red, and just getting that into the right position and getting it re-associated with the tear film, back in contact with the tear film again, you can basically address that problem and make it go away. And so that, again, can be corrected surgically. So a lot of these eyelid-related conditions do require surgical procedures to correct them, but they can usually be affected fairly easily and effectively with a short outpatient procedure that's pretty easy to go through and is not uncomfortable at all. Well, we've been here now for an hour talking about eyes and eye care, and I've certainly had a lot of fun and hope you have too. I'd like to thank Andrea and Will for helping out here in the studio. And I'd like to say thanks to all you listeners for making this show work through your calls and through your letters. If you enjoyed our program today, be sure to listen again next week. If you have a question, you can always email it to us. Our email address is eyes@hawaiianeye.com, and we'll answer your questions over the air. You can also tweet us or check out our tweets on twitter.com/Dr. Tortora, D-R-T-O-R-T-O-R-A. Check us out, www.hawaiianeye.com. You'll find our Facebook, Twitter, and all the other information there, as well as podcasts of this radio program. It's sure been a pleasure talking with you. The Hawaiian Eye Show is sponsored by Hawaiian Eye Center, where life has never looked better, with offices in central Oahu and in Hilo on the Big Island. You're listening to the Hawaiian Eye Show. I'm Dr. Christopher Tortora, coming to you here live from KHVH Radio. Thanks so much for listening, and aloha.
You've been listening to the Hawaiian Eye Show, sponsored by the Hawaiian Eye Center, where life has never looked better, with Harvard-trained eye surgeon Dr. Christopher Tortora. If you have an eye problem, want to get a second opinion, or aren't seeing as well as you used to, make an appointment with Dr. Tortora or one of the doctors of the Hawaiian Eye Center in Central Oahu or Hilo by calling C-2020. That's 733-2020. Until next week, here's looking at you.
Life has never looked better with Hawaiian Eye Center.
When you have a cataract, your vision gets gradually worse over time. You don't see as well.
Having the corrective surgery and now having the vision of a much younger man, I can see again.
Our state-of-the-art surgery center offers safety and convenience without a hospital stay. Visit our website and learn what's involved in a cataract procedure. You'll be surprised how easy it can be.
Take a virtual tour of a cataract procedure at their website, hawaiianeye.com. To make an appointment, call Hawaiian Eye Center at C-2020. That's 733-2020. Or from the neighbor islands, call 888-621-2020.